ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Maya is very strong. In the name of philanthropy, altruism, and humanism, people are feeling compassion for suffering humanity throughout the world. Philanthropists and altruists do not realize that it is impossible to improve people's material conditions. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to try to raise them to spiritual consciousness. Material comforts cannot be increased or decreased. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.18, Ta labhyate dukhavat anyatah sukham. As far as material happiness is concerned, that comes without effort, just as tribulations come without effort. Material happiness and pain can be attained without endeavor. One should not bother for material activities. If one is at all sympathetic or able to do good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. In this way, everyone advances by the grace of the Lord. For our instruction, Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way, we should be very careful not to be misled by so-called welfare activities conducted in bodily terms. One should not give up his interest in attaining the favor of Lord Vishnu at any cost. Generally, people do not know this or they forget it. Consequently, they sacrifice their original interest, the attainment of Vishnu's favor, and engage in philanthropic activities for bodily comfort. Om Agyanti Nirantasya Gyaninjana Shalakaya Chakshurumitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurudama Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishyam Svamitanyena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamanyam Padati Svapratikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Padamaya Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Even though one is in the renounced order, one who is advanced certainly feels compassion for suffering living entities. One should certainly neglect his own personal interest, although they may be very important to protect one who has surrendered. So in this verse, we see that the trail of thought continues. So Maharaj Bharat was reflecting upon why he is looking after this deer, and he is giving reasons as to why he should protect the deer. You see, because the baby deer was still very vulnerable, it was a still young baby deer. So Maharaj Bharat felt as if it was his duty to look after the deer. So in the previous text, he was speaking that one who surrenders unto you, he must be protected. So he feels that this deer has somehow come into his custody, into his shelter. So now it becomes his duty to look after the deer. And he was thinking that he is the only father, mother, friend, relative of this deer, because the deer has no one. This little baby deer actually has nobody else to look after him. So in this way, giving these thoughts, this text continues his trail of thoughts, where he's actually thinking, yes, I must look after the deer, because he says even those who are in the renounced order of life have compassion. You see, the more you become advance in your spiritual life, the more compassionate you will be towards other human beings. And this is what he's trying to indicate here, that by since he's in the renounced order of life, so he actually, it's natural for him to have compassion for other living entities, including animals. Which is all good, but if you look at what Maharaj Bharat gave up, actually Maharaj Bharat literally gave up everything. In general, what do people have? They have a house, maybe few utensils, a few clothes, maybe a car. So very few things. But Maharaj Bharat was the king of the entire earth planet, the Bharat Varsha, that time was the whole of the earth planet. And he was the king of that planet where he had everything at his disposal. He had, he was living in a palace, not in a small house like us. And he had thousands of servants at his disposal. And he could enjoy as much as he wanted. So he gave up the opportunity of unlimited sense gratification. You see, because just as here, Srila Prabhupada, the very first line says, Maya is very strong. And Maharaj Bharat, even as when he was a king, he knew this. He knew that Maya was very strong. And all the activities that he was doing as a king, he was also doing with the consciousness that this is, he's doing it as a servant of the Lord. Right? He didn't consider them as his own. That's why he was able to renounce, because he was not attached. He was able to give up that opulent kingdom, that kingly opulence, his family members, wonderful wife, and nice obedient sons. He could give up all that to become a renunciate. So he came to the forest. And how much can you enjoy in the forest? You can eat maybe few berries and few cherries and few fruits. And what else can you do? Right? So, and that too when you're alone. So he was in that situation, he put himself in that situation because he wanted to purify himself of any trace of sense gratification that may have been left. So he completely renounced those kingly activities that he was doing, and he took to this renounce order, which was very austere. Living in the forest was very austere. And he was living near the Kandaki River, where he was worshipping according to all the rules and regulations. Now for him to come from that level and then become entangled in looking after a deer, it was a very a sad situation. So Srila Prabhupada mentions at one place, he says sometimes the sentiment can be misapplied. So sometimes the sentiment can be misapplied. So that's just like in this case where he felt that he had to look after the deer. But we see that Maharaj Bharat was actually a Kshatriya. So he had a Kshatriya spirit in him. So what is duty of a Kshatriya, of a king? We see that all these kings, like the other in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear about Yudhishthir Maharaj, we hear about Prithu Maharaj, you hear about Lord Rishabhdev himself, and all these kings who were there, they actually did their duties very nicely. It is actually their duty to look after the material welfare of the citizens. There's nothing wrong in that. And Srila Prabhupada says that we must follow the Varnashrama system. And we should very sincerely do the duty that has been allocated to us. So looking after the welfare of the people is part of their duties. And it's not a spiritual duty once, it's a material duty. You're doing your duty according to the Varnashrama. And it is also mentioned like in Bhagavad Gita that when Krishna mentions the qualities of the Kshatriyas, he says they have this Ishwari Bhava in them. I am the controller. It's my responsibility. I must do it. If I don't do it, it will not get done. Nobody else will do it. So they take it upon themselves to do the tasks, to do their responsibilities. So in this way, they have this in them. It's natural for them to be the protector of others, to give shelter to others. So Varnashram system in that sense is actually very helpful because it forms a base platform from where to take off. For example, if a plane has to land or the plane has to take off, where will it take off from? It has to be standing somewhere. So this Varnashram system is like the base platform from where your devotional life can begin. So these kings, all these kings like Yudhishthir Maharaj and Prithu Maharaj, they were kings, but they were saintly kings. They were Rajarishis. Because although they engaged in material welfare activities, like they dug wells, they provided for, they made sure there was abundant supply of food for the citizens, they made sure there were no quarrels in the citizens, the law and order was maintained, and they also made sure that the rich did not exploit the poor. There was no exploitation, there was no stealing, there were no such things. On the contrary, they engaged them in devotional service, in devotional activities, right? Just as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that as great men do, common men follow. So these saintly kings actually they demonstrated a very good example that even though they were kings, they were very detached and they engaged in devotional service. In spite of being kings and having to look after the entire kingdom, they engaged in devotional service. And that's what Maharaj Bharat was also doing before he came to the forest. He was doing acts of charity, austerity, penance, and lot of sacrifices for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. And because the king was doing, and king, you see, the citizens looked upon these kings as their father. They looked upon the kings as their shelter. And they put a lot of faith in these kings. So when you have faith in someone, then whatever they do, you want to follow them. So in this way, the entire population of the kingdom were engaged in devotional service because they wouldn't let them become distracted. They made them engage in devotional activities. So this is why Varnashrama system was very helpful and it helped them progress in their spiritual life because generally they were engaged in activities to which they have a natural inclination. So everybody was engaged in an occupation or a profession that naturally occurred to them. So if you're doing something which is your natural interest, then you don't need to make so much effort. You feel satisfied doing it. And at the same time, it forms the source of your livelihood. Right? But if you're engaged in a profession where it's not your liking, it's not something of your liking, you're just doing it because you have to, then you will not put your sincere efforts into it. So Srila Prabhupada actually encourages Varnashrama system in that sense. He says it is very helpful. And he says that this Indian caste system, which is like, you know, it's looked upon as notoriously these days. But originally, it was meant, it was based on gunas dharma. It was meant based on the original qualities of an individual and what they wanted to do. This was given to them. And, but, as mentioned, that these activities are good, but they are incomplete. They are incomplete if Krishna is not the center. Right? So you can actually live a very happy life by following the Vedic injunctions. What are the Vedic injunctions? The four goals of human form of life: dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So you follow this and you'll be happy. But it is incomplete because you are just limiting it to your current life. So then these four goals of human life is you do dharma, that means you follow the scriptures, the injunction in the scriptures. You do dharma, you perform austerities and sacrifices to get artha, to get money. And then what do you do with the money? You fulfill your karma, you fulfill your desires. And eventually you become frustrated because material goal, you will never be happy. You can try as much as you like to fulfill your desires. There will always be something. Like Srila Prabhupada says, there is sand in the sweet rice. There will always be something that will keep bothering you. So just, so eventually you will take to liberation. Dharma, artha, kama, eventually leads to moksha. But you haven't taken up devotional service. So this is Varnashrama Dharma, which is incomplete. It is not Daivi Varnashrama Dharma. Daivi Varnashrama Dharma means when you put Krishna in the center, when all activities that you perform, you do with the consciousness that you are acting as an agent of the Supreme Lord. It is not that you will be doing anything different, but the consciousness with which you do, that matters a lot. Right? So at the very outset of Srimad Bhagavatam, you see, Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all scriptures. It gives us the essence, the topmost goal. So that's what, at the very essence, what is these four goals of human life, what are they called? They are called Kaitav Dharma. You know? They are Dharma Brojita Kaitavo. They are completely rejected. You know, these four goals of human form of life are completely rejected at the very outset of Srimad Bhagavatam. So very text 2 of chapter 1 says this is not to be the goal of life. So then what is meant to be the goal of life? Then when Sutta Goswami in chapter 2 of Srimad Bhagavatam, canto 1, he clearly says, dharma swanishtha pumsam vivat sena kathasuya notpadye jati ratin. If you haven't, got attraction for the Supreme Lord, notpadye jati ratin shramhyevi kevalam, then it's a useless waste of labor. You're just laboring for nothing. If all your activities, whatever you are doing as part of your occupation or profession, it is not elevating you on a spiritual platform, then it is a waste of time. It's a waste of your human form of life. So this is how then, and Krishna also says to Arjuna and Bhagavad Gita, that something that is repeated again and again, because this is one point that is hammered clearly in Bhagavatam and in Srila Prabhupada's purports, that Traigunya Vishya Veda Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna. So Krishna is asking Arjuna to rise above the modes. So basically, if you see Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, what are they? A combination of different modes. A Brahmana is a mode of goodness, Kshatriya is a mode of goodness and passion, Vaishya is a mode of passion and ignorance, and Sudra is a mode of ignorance. So they are basically a combination of modes, and Krishna is saying, rise above the modes. So don't be flattered by the flowery words of the Vedas, rise above the modes. Which means, yes, you follow this Varnashrama system, but you elevate yourself using this system. Don't degrade yourself. Because if Krishna is absent in your life, then this same Varnashrama system can degrade you because it actually means nothing. So then, we see that there are actually devotee kings that are mentioned in Bhagavatam, who actually perform their Kshatriya duty, even going to extreme risk to themselves. You know, just like Maharaj Shivi was encountered with a situation where a dove came to him and he asked for shelter. The dove said, please protect me, this hawk wants to eat me. And then a hawk came flying to the king. And he told the hawk, you cannot have him, he's in my shelter. And then the hawk said, look, he's my food, this dove is my food, I have to eat something to survive. So then King Shivi says, okay, I will give you, the hawk asks, he says, you have to give me flesh from your body. I will not take anything from the kitchen. He refused to take any other flesh from the kitchen. So then he said, okay, to save the life of this dove, I will give you an equivalent weight as of the weight of this dove. So they were put on the scale. So dove was put in one side of the scale. And then Maharshi cut a part of his flesh from his left thigh and put on the other side. But it was not enough. So he cut another piece of flesh from his left side of his body. It was still not enough. Then he cut more. And then he started cutting the right side of his body. And eventually he had to sit himself because it was not enough. And then he realized that it was Indra and Agni Devu had come to test him. So they had come as the dove and as the hawk. But what this passage shows is that as Kshatriyas, they can give up everything except their honor. They will give up their life, but they will not give up their honor. They will not give up their role. So they can go to any extent to protect that. That's why Maharshi was a great devotee of the Lord. So you see, even to even execute your duties perfectly and sincerely in the world ashram system, you have to be Krishna conscious. Because if you are attached, then you can't give up. Then you can't sacrifice for the needs of others. Maharshi was a great devotee of the Lord. That's why he was able to go to this extent to protect his honor. And then also we hear the passing of Rantidev. He saw the Supreme Lord's presence everywhere and everyone. So this one time when there was a severe drought in his kingdom, famine, and there was no food for anyone. So whatever was there in his kitchen he gave, he would distribute, and in the end he and his family would eat. And the next day he would do the same. So this eventually his kitchen became empty. There was nothing growing, there was no rain, so there was no crops. So it came to a stage where he was hungry, and he and his family were hungry for 48 days. There was nothing to eat. And then someone then brought him a bowl of food. It was made of milk and ghee and flour, so that bowl of food. And he after 48 days, he felt he had something to eat. So he was going to eat, and then a Brahmana comes. And a Brahmana says, I'm hungry, I haven't had anything, can you please give me something? Now being the king, it was his duty to first give to others. So he gives his a portion of food from the bowl to this Brahmana. And then another person comes. He says, I haven't had anything for days, can you give me something? He also gives him a portion. Then a man comes with dogs, a Shudra comes. And then a Chandala comes. And by that time, there's nothing left, only a few drops of water. So even that few drops of water, he gives this to this Chandala and says, my throat is parched dry, I'm about to die. So now Maharaj Rantidev is also at a stage where he's about to die because he's hungry for so many days. But till the last minute of his life, he was so Krishna conscious. He saw the Supreme Lord in all these persons who were coming to him for food. So he gave them whatever he had, just one bowl of food, and that also gave away, and he had nothing left. So eventually then they were none other than this Brahmana, this dog, this dog eater, and this Chandala, none other than their gods, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they had come to test him. And they were very pleased with him, and they wanted to bless him, they wanted to give him all the opulences in the world. But he said, I don't want any of this. He did not take any of the great opulences and benedictions that they wanted to give him. So you see, this is, they were so Krishna conscious, they were able to execute their Varnashrama Dharma even more perfectly than if they had not been on this Krishna conscious. So then, Maharaj, coming back to Maharaj Bharat. So Maharaj Bharat, when he was a king, he was doing his duties perfectly. He was Krishna conscious, he was engaged. But then when he became a sage, when he became a renounced sage, then the duties change. You see, when we are in one ashram, then the duties, we have a particular set of duties. And when we are in another ashram, the duties change. Similarly, as devotees, what may be our service a week back may not be our service now. And what is our service at present may not be our service in the future. So we must always be conscious of the services that were given to us. And we should not digress from the the limit or the boundaries of the services that are allocated to us. So here we see that Maharaj Bharat, he seems to be going a little bit over the board. Because he, in the verse, ensuing verses, we will see that he not only is seeing it as his responsibility, see, if he had just done it out of duty, he probably would not have gone that far. But he became very attached to the deer. He would show affection to the deer, and when he would go to the forest to get items for his sacrifice, for his jagat with the Supreme Lord, like tulsi, flowers, water, he would carry the deer on his shoulders. And he was afraid that he would go into the forest and then the tigers, the wolves might catch the deer. So he was carrying the deer on his shoulders, and then he would feed the deer. And then when he was doing his sacrifice, he was so distracted that he would stop the sacrifice. You're not supposed to do that. Ideally, you finish it from end to end. But he would get up in the middle to check on the deer. Where is he? Is he around? And then when he's not able to see, then he laments. Where is this little baby deer gone? Has the wolf eaten him? Has the tiger eaten him? Will he come back? It's all my fault. I've been so neglectful to the deer. See, he was completely attached. Like a mother would be attached to their children. He was attached to this baby deer. And then completely in that consciousness. So you see, he was not just doing his duty, he went beyond that level. He actually became very, very attached to this deer. Now if you think of it, do all deers, baby deers, need this kind of love and affection to grow? Deers, they're wild animals, they're wild creatures, they live in the forest. They usually find their flock. They go back to their flock and they survive. They know defense skills. They stay in herds, right? They stay together with each other and they can indicate to each other if there is danger. And in the forest, they actually know which areas are frequented by tigers and other animals like that. So they would stay away from those areas. So they know self-defense. It's not that they need to be looked after to this extent. So he forgot that this little baby deer is an animal who can look after himself. So he feels that this deer is my son. He feels like the deer is his son and he's an obedient son. So when he's performing sacrifices and the deer sort of comes in touch with the grass with its teeth and makes it mochi, then he chastises the deer and the deer just like, a humble child sits next to him. And he feels so much affection when the deer behaves in this land. So his love for the deer was something that was completely, that was the only thing on his mind. He loved the deer, and then eventually when he was dying, then he felt that, oh, this deer is sitting next to me when I'm about to leave my body. He's sitting next to me like my obedient son. He's the only one with me here. So then he dies, he leaves his body in that consciousness. But one point that must be noted is that Maharaj Bharat didn't intend to leave Krishna consciousness. He didn't intend to give up his devotional service. He was intending to do it, but along with that, he was intending to look after this deer. So he got mixed up. And what happened was the service that he was doing, the devotional service and activities that he was doing became less and less, and the love for the deer grew more and more. And in this way, his devotional life was interrupted, was definitely interrupted. So that's why we should be careful as to, even as devotees, what responsibilities do you take? Like Srila Prabhupada here says that it is not a duty to mitigate the suffering of others, because it's already decided by a karma. Material conditions are already established by the superior administration according to one's karma. They cannot be changed. The only benefit we can render to suffering beings is to strive to raise them to spiritual consciousness. So this is the only benefit. And Srila Prabhupada mentions spiritual consciousness here, and further on he says Krishna consciousness. So he's being more specific what exactly we need. He says if one is at all sympathetic or able to be good to others, he should endeavor to raise people to Krishna consciousness. So he's emphasizing on this point so much. He's mentioned it two times in this this purport. Yes, in this way everyone advances spiritually by the grace of the Lord. So now, at the same time we have to be careful, because one might think, okay, if everything is determined by the karma of the people, then should we just ignore everyone and ignore every situation that is in our way? Should we not act? I mean, it doesn't mean that we should stop responding to situations and to people, because it's whatever is going to happen is going to happen anyway. What can we do? So we have to be careful as to not become completely docile or neglectful of our duties in the name of doing devotional service for bhakti, because Krishna consciousness is active in the activity of devotional service. It is not passive. Krishna consciousness is not passive. And then also, because if you become passive, so how much you respond to help others? The question is, if you see someone in trouble, do you help them? And how much do you help them? To what extent do you go? Then the question also is, if you do help them, then how does it affect you? So, as long as we can offer help without becoming entangled, that is acceptable. Like for example, you know, some elderly lady wants to cross the road and the traffic is too fast, you can stop the traffic, you can help her cross the road. That is a little act of kindness, and it's not costing you much. You're just able to do it and, you know, it's over. Or if somebody is in the plane and elderly person is struggling to put their bag in the cabin, so you're helping them to do that. These are little acts of kindness. But if some thief is trying to attack a passerby, and do you want to jump into the situation to help them? You might end up getting slashed with a knife, right? In fact, I was listening to a lecture that a devotee tried to help a fight between two people in a street, and he ended up becoming hurt, and he was struggling for his life, because there was a thief had a weapon. So how much do you want to become entangled? So it depends. It's use your reasonability, or you want to make big changes in the world, you want to, you know, you get involved in big projects for the welfare, for example, you want to eradicate plastic from the whole world. You want to take up a project. You know, it involves a big project, and it's not job of an individual, it's governments and bureaucrats involved. How much can you do? So, or if you want to resolve disputes amongst people, how much can you do? Or should you do it? How much do you want to get involved? So yeah, you have to be able to discriminate as to what situation is in front of you and how much you want to help others. Srila Prabhupada actually he didn't say that you become insensitive to others. But like for example, you know, where there was once Srila Prabhupada was in his room and he was translating, and he was sitting on his desk. And there was a small bug on his desk. And he called his servant and he said, "You take this bug, you put him in the garden, because on my desk he's not going to be able to find any food and he will die." So that is essentially looking after somebody's life, you're caring for somebody's life. But then that's what Prabhupada did. He wasn't completely neglectful of the other's, you know, miseries or their suffering. So then the servant took that bag and he put it in the garden where he could find food, he could live there. That was his natural habitat. So in this way, the Prabhupada has also not said that we become, because see, if you become completely irresponsible, then you might also think, oh, it's, you know, I'm just going to sit at home and read Krishna book. Because if Krishna wants to make someone Krishna conscious, he will arrange it. He will arrange it somehow. Why bother? So he just sits in the room. But nobody can go book distribution, nobody will preach, because we just have to do our thing and not run. But that's not the move. Maybe as devotees, like, you know, Srila Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is not meant for armchair speculators. It is active engagement in devotional service. You know, like in the last, in the book Bhagavatam month, I saw some devotees, they were going out for books and they did so much book distribution that they've lost weight. Because they had no time to eat, and their hardly getting any sleep, and they're just so focused on their book distribution, they you see them now, they've lost weight. And obviously Krishna will definitely reciprocate with them. They're doing it for the pleasure of the Lord, and the Lord will definitely reciprocate with them, and they're not. So in this way we have to understand the philosophy, not misinterpret, like Maharaj Bharat here is actually giving reasons why you should do it. You should misinterpret, you know, misapply the sentiment. He was, the philosophy is correct, but it's misapplied. In this situation, he didn't need to do it because he was a renunciate. And he became attached. And Srila Prabhupada actually mentioned that he does it for us. Right? Bharat Maharaj acted in such a way. Right? So, some examples in the scriptures are actually showing us what is, they're giving us warnings. What is the negative that we shouldn't do? Like Vishnupitama was on the wrong side. And, you know, here Maharaj Bharat, he took a wrong, he made a wrong choice. So some examples are like, some passages in the scriptures are like warning to us what shouldn't be done. And if it is done, then what is the result? Right, for example, in Ajamal's pastime, you see how Ajamal fell down and he had to endure extreme suffering, but just that little calling of the holy names of the Lord saved him and then he took his lesson. So those kind of pastimes are a warning for us. You know, if you don't take this option, this is what you get. If you try to do this, this is what the result will be. So in this way, we get to make a choice. But it has to be a Krishna conscious choice. So today is also the appearance day of Lochan Das Thakur. So we'll say a few words about Lochan Das Thakur. Now Lochan Das Thakur was, he was born in a Brahmana family. He was the son of Kamalakar Das and Sri Sadanandi Devi. And they were living in the Burdwan district near Katpa in Bengal. So Lochan Das Thakur from a very early age, he was a very detached person. He wasn't interested in material affairs. And in his young age, he spent most of the time living with his grandparents. And he had the fortune of being with devotees of Lord Varanga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's devotees. So he used to associate with them, that was a natural inclination. He was attracted towards bhakti. So he then he met his guru. He went to a place called Sri Khanda, which was some distance from where he lived, and there he found Narahari Sarkar. Narahari Sarkar, as you know, is a close associate, a very dear associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he took shelter of Narahari Sarkar. So then he was guided under the shelter of Narahari Sarkar, who encouraged him, and he was specifically trained in doing kirtan. Lochan Das Thakur was trained in doing kirtan by Narahari Sarkar, and he was also encouraged to write a book called Chaitanya Mangal. So, Lochan Das Thakur is the author of Chaitanya Mangal. Lochan Das Thakur was actually married at a very early age, in early teens, but in those days, just as the custom was that the wife lives in her parents' house, she's a young girl, and the husband still lives with his parents, so they never actually live together. So when Lochan Das Thakur went and was living with his Guru Maharaj, Narahari Sarkar, he actually forgot about the whole thing and he was inclined to go back to his life. So he was engaging, writing his books. So Murari Gupta, who we know is a person associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to write a diary. He used to write in Sanskrit verses the passing of the Lord of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So when he would write, then that diary was now a compilation, it was a book. So Damodar Pandit would read out his diary again and again to Lochan Das Thakur. And Lochan Das Thakur would hear it with great pleasure. And eventually, Lochan Das Thakur memorized all these Sanskrit verses. And he became very ecstatic, you know, hearing these verses again and again. Then Narahari Sarkar actually encouraged him to write a book, because this was a diary and he actually memorize the verses, but you need to put it in a book so everybody can get to read it. So Lochan Das Thakur, he wrote beautiful verses in Bengali. They were called Panchali. Panch means five. So Panchali means in five different styles of writing verses. So he wrote these verses in beautiful Bengali language, and then they were in the form of Chaitanya Mangal. So he compiled this book, and then Vrindavan Das Thakur really appreciated his book as well. And he, Lochan Das Thakur in his Chaitanya Mangal in the beginning, in the introduction, he actually also glorifies Vrindavan Das Thakur's book, which is called Chaitanya Bhagavata. So when we think of authors, we think of three great devotees, three great personalities. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita, that is in great detail. All the passings of the Lord are mentioned in very great detail, and especially the passings that happened after sannyas. And then Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chaitanya Bhagavat is brief, it touches some of the passings briefly, and it doesn't go into much detail in the passings after sannyas. So Chaitanya Bhagavat is another book which is very sweet. Wonderful passings of the Lord are mentioned in Chaitanya Bhagavat. And it is compiled by Vrindavan Das Thakur. And then the third one is Chaitanya Mangal by Lochan Das Thakur. So the third one wrote this book, and this book is brief. All the passings are in there. Not the ones after sannyas are not there, and the ones that are there are in there in brief. It's a small book, it's not a multi-volume book like Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in this way, Chaitanya Mangal was involved in serving his guru. So what happened was, when since he was married and he didn't go back to his wife, so his parents approached Narahari Sarkar and they said that he needs to go back to his wife, he needs to, you know, start living a family life. So he then his Guru Maharaj Narahari Sarkar sent him to his in-law's house. So he went to the village, but he couldn't remember which house it was, because he had never been there before, once before, but he never went there after that. So he was wondering where it is. So then he came across a well in the outskirts of the village, and there were some ladies filling water there. So he asked one of the ladies, his mother, can you send me the house of so-and-so person? So that lady gave him the directions. He reaches his in-law's house. But when he gets there, he realizes that this lady who had given her the address was none other than his wife. And he had already addressed her as a mother. So then the rest of his life, he told her that I would always see her as a mother. And that's how he lived the rest of his life. That was the end of his business life in one sense. And he was fortunate that the wife was also not complaining or anything. Also very elevated soul. So in this way, Lochanas Thakur has given us this beautiful narration. If you know Bengali, the English in Bengali, it's very sweet if you read the actual compilation, but you will get the English translation as well, Chaitanya Mangal, it's a small book. So I'll end here and see if there are any questions or comments or corrections. Please.
From the first part. So like this Narad Maharaj, he was one of son of Rishabhdev, he got teachings and everything. Later he was renounced everything. But like if you compare our lives, like we don't have that much like things like instruction, but same time like I want to know what was the problem in his life that he went to this path for long. So that we can.
So what was the problem in the sense, why he went to the forest?
No, why he got fallen out from his sannyas to this attached to the leader. Like, our life we have so many things we are attached to.
Mm-hmm.
So how in our life we apply the same thing, like,
mm-hmm.
you get protected and follow the process properly.
Mm-hmm. Srila Prabhupada answers this in the very first sentence of Prabhupada. He says, Maya is very strong. Mm-hmm. Right? So you may give up something really big, but she will creep in. Like, you know, like Prabhupada says, you can have a completely closed room with no doors and windows, nothing. Just like a small hole, like the size of a needle, the air comes in, right? You can create a vacuum, but the air comes in. Similarly, if you, Maya is just looking for just a little small weakness in you, and then it uses that to distract you. See, that's what happened to Maharaj Bharat, because he started to feel that it's his duty. And also in that last one, that he may not have done that. But that's just that Kshatriya Bhav, not that good in a gross sense, but it was in a very honorable way he did it. But he felt that he was a protector. So that was very good. So that's why when we are engaged in our life, even in services, we have to be able to discern, like I said, you have to know what is my service, what is my duty. You know, and then if you see something, but you correct that issue, it's not your duty, you don't get involved. You may be informed the higher authorities or the person who's responsible, who can take care of that, but you don't become involved because it's not your duty. Right? Because a lot of times you may feel, oh, this should be like this and that should be like that. But who knows? the things may not actually, there may not actually be an issue there, it could be about mind, right? Sometimes the mind also plays up. So we should, yeah, always take guidance. Wherever in confusion, like Prabhupada says, Guru, Sadhu, Shastra, they're always there to guide us. Okay? Yes,
where should we draw the line, how much better work to do? Like for example, if the devotee is maybe not into environmentalism, but still we care for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not into welfare work, but still we do even have other persons' material benefit, right? So where to draw the line that we don't do too much, not too less?
Yes, so this is a purport in which you can write papers and papers and talk as much as you want, because ISKCON is involved in a lot of projects which may apparently seem to be just at a, you know, welfare level, social welfare level, like during the COVID, during the situation, pandemic situation in India, they were giving prasadam to so many places, there was a whole setup and big scale they were serving prasadam. So is that not social welfare? But like Srila Prabhupada said, prasadam is a secret weapon. Those who don't directly take up, eventually they will. So sometimes it's a lot of groundwork which doesn't seem direct, you know. You're not directly giving Krishna consciousness, but sometimes you just have to do a lot of groundwork after which you present. You know, like Srila Prabhupada, when he preached in the beginning, what did he do? He didn't tell them the rules first, he didn't tell them Suchi Muchi or this, he just said, just chant. He just did Sunday feast. He just asked them to come, he would do the kirtan and give a little bit of class, whether it made any sense to them or not, doesn't matter, but and then he said prasadam. And slowly, slowly, I say prasadam, and then they slowly became purified. So, and then for you saying environment, yes, at our level, we don't try to make it worse. We use disposable, don't use disposable, use paper or use, you know, steel plates. But how much can you do for the rest of the world? Because it is what it is. And in Kali Yuga especially, we are trying to rip off the earth of all the, you know, its natural products that it's giving us and just use it for ourselves and not leave anything to the future generation. We know that it's a problem. But how much can you educate the common people? Because that's the thing. You can only educate them about this if you give them Krishna consciousness. If you give them Krishna consciousness, then they may start to look at it when they see that, you know, it's not meant for my sense gratification. Right now, what is the mood of the society? Present day, they are not even, they are following absolute varnashram system, because it's not even, you know, following the natural inclinations of the, you know, they're not even following the scriptures to engage in different activities. They're not doing anything which is like the natural inclination. It's just an absolute system where neither the welfare of others nor the welfare of those who are working for you, their welfare is not your goal. It's not your duty, that's not what they're following. They're following an absolute varnashram system where their own personal sense gratification is the goal. So what is considered good is, oh, everybody should have a good dose of sense gratification. Everybody should be able to enjoy it and say, oh yeah, he's doing good. He's good, he's happy. He has enough money to do what he wants to do in life. That's considered good. You know, do what you can and enjoy as much as you can. So in this kind of a moral consciousness, how much can you educate them about environment when they don't even care about their own fellow beings, you know, they don't even care about human beings. So yes, it's sad the way the world is going, it is sad, but then you have to do your reasonable bit, whatever you can, but then let's be the rest of Krishna. This is how Kali Yuga is really making progress.
But sometimes it's because we're not preaching, I mean, people, and they say that that the materialistic persons outside, they're doing more, you know, welfare work, or they're caring more for the environment than the devotees. You were saying it's the other way around. But he was like a preacher, and many people they were telling like that, like, you're meant to be very spiritual, but in the behavior, sometimes it shows that you're not. He was giving that example, he was visiting one ISKCON temple in Indonesia. And they were like very careful about all the achievement, all the water purification, everything, and how they do their puja. But then at the same time, once a week, they would burn all the plastic rubbish.
Oh.
So,
Yes, look, I mean, we have to be, they don't understand the higher goal. See, that is, our social welfare activities are limited to this very life, just this one body, and it comes to an end. Then you ask them this question, okay, can you, why do you even have plastic? Why are all your governments creating plastic? Why is it encouraged in the first place? If you are so concerned about the environment, then these social welfare activists should first not even allow such a thing to be created, right? He's saying that devotees do this, then what are the present day governments doing? Right, so you can question, they have to actually do it. If they feel so strongly about it, then what about, there's so many things that they're doing that they're actually not even conscious. So, yeah, anything else? Yes, sir.
Just a comment on that. When the same question was asked to Radhana Swami, one of the conferences, he explains that various organizations, they are trying to address the problem of pollution externally by controlling the activities of humans. But ISKCON is trying to educate them internally so that they have the conscience of how to use the resources in around us and how not to exploit God-given resources. So that was Swami's explanation of how ISKCON's stand towards pollution, educate the human beings internally, who they are. And our other organizations are trying to address the problem as well by controlling activities, like industries or
regulations.
Is it on there? The Ram Charchman Bhagavatam Ki.
Yes.